This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 6 may be the ultimate refutation to the idea that composers write happy music when they're happy and sad music when they're sad. This darkest and most pessimistic work by a composer famous for his wild musical mood swings was written during one of the happiest times in his life. In March 1902, only 4 months after meeting her, Mahler had married the vivacious, gifted, and beautiful Alma Schindler. One daughter, Maria, was born that year, and another, Anna, came along in June 1904. Mahler's music was getting more performances, and even seemed at times to be meeting with more understanding. His work at the Vienna Court Opera was going well, and many of those productions have become the stuff of operatic legend. But Mahler believed strongly that artists have the power to intuit events even before they occur, and they cannot escape the pain of such foreknowledge. He imagined the finale of the Sixth Symphony as a scenario in which the hero is assaulted by three hammer blows of fate, the last of which fells him as a tree is felled. 2 years after finishing the symphony, the summer of 1907 brought him his own three hammer blows, his daughter Maria's death, the discovery of his own heart disease, and the bitter end of his directorship of the Vienna Opera. As Alma later put it, the Sixth Symphony is Mahler's autobiography, written ahead of time. But was Mahler writing about himself? Was he seeing visions of his own future, or of the war to end all wars a decade ahead? As far in the future as Auschwitz and Babi Yar, or was he just writing a symphony? We know from Alma that Mahler was emotionally more engaged by his work on this piece than by any other in his life, that after the final dress rehearsal, he walked up and down in the artist's room, sobbing, wringing his hands, unable to control himself, and that at the first performance, he was so afraid of losing control, so afraid of the demons he himself had unleashed, that he conducted poorly and nearly collapsed on the podium. Mahler's other symphonies may end in triumph, in quiet bliss, or at their darkest, in resignation and acceptance. But the Sixth stands alone in the utter despair of its conclusion. Mahler begins the symphony with a grim march. We feel the tramp before we hear the band, but it only takes 5 measures of fierce crescendo before the music is hugely present. Then, over a diminishing snare drum roll, 2 timpanists beat a march cadence and 3 trumpeters sound a chord of A major. They, too, make a diminuendo, and halfway down, the chord changes from major to minor. That change is the key to Mahler's Symphony No. 6. Fate or tragedy? No words say it as surely as that phrase. A sudden mood swing brings in a melody that Alma tells us is intended to represent her. But even the moments of happiness she represents are constantly interrupted by the march of fate. There are happy memories as well, such as the sounds of the village band from Mahler's youth. Alma eventually returns to close the exposition, but the development is dominated by the marchers. Later, the hero is able to escape to sanctuary in the mountains. We hear mysterious chord changes in the celesta and violins, and the sound of distant cowbells, the last greeting from Earth to penetrate the remote solitude of the mountain peaks, Mahler said. The awakening from this vision is sudden and unkind. Another march, but this time almost aggressively jolly. Even the opening theme returns in major mode, but not for long. Alma returns to drive the demons away, and the movement ends with herself in a gesture of triumph. Mahler had difficulty making up his mind about the order of the two middle movements. The critical complete edition of 1963 places the scherzo second, and most conductors follow this sequence, since the movement begins with a grotesque parody of the first, a folk dance for goblins. Rhythms are askew throughout, keeping the whole movement off balance. The central trio, which comes around twice, is extremely irregular in rhythm, stopping, starting again, and stuttering along. Alma Mahler heard in it the arrhythmical play of little children. Her reading of the coda, though, is that the childish voices become more and more tragic, finally to die out in a whimper. After the first two movements of suppressed violence and imminent disaster, the andante comes as sweet relief. This is a melody that might be dangerous if written by anyone else, but in Mahler's hands, it's a thing of magic, cliché turned into event, as Theodor Adorno wrote in his analysis of the symphony. This is one of Mahler's most beautiful and magical orchestrations, the changing colors delicately overlapping. At the climax, Mahler brings back the mysterious sound of the cowbells, and in the distance, you can hear echoes of the first of Mahler's Kinder Totenlieder, his laments on the deaths of children, and of the Life in Heaven finale of the Fourth Symphony. The finale is about the same length as the first movement, but it feels bigger. It has a bigger story to tell. From the thud of a low C, there arises an almost mystical swirl of strangely luminous musical dust. The first violins spin off a phrase which climbs and falls, and on its way down, it collides with a specter we've not met in some time, the major chord that turns to minor, and the drummers with their fierce marching cadence. Mahler has designed this movement in the classic sonata plan of introduction, exposition, development, recapitulation, and coda. Each transition point is marked by a hammer blow to the hero, followed by the cloud of dust and the major-minor fate chord change. From the introduction, the music gradually breaks through to the world of marches. The hero goes forth to conquer. But in the full flood of confidence, the first hammer blow strikes him down. Mahler wanted the effect of a short, powerful, heavy-sounding blow of non-metallic quality, like the stroke of an axe. The music gathers energy. The forward march becomes more frenzied, only to be halted again by a second hammer blow. In Mahler's original conception of the symphony, a third hammer blow coincided with the fate chord at the last appearance of the introductory dust storm. But he eliminated it when he revised the symphony. No one knows why, but conductor Benjamin Zander suspects it was because Mahler identified too closely with his hero and couldn't face the thought of hearing that third fatal blow while on the podium. When it makes its final appearance, the fate chord is the last A major we hear. Over a long drum roll that glues the music to A minor, trombones and tuba stammer fragments of funeral music. The symphony comes to a halt, recedes into inaudibility. The final, brutal, tragic gesture is a sudden blast of A minor, and behind it, the drummer's last grim tattoo. Mahler did not give his Sixth Symphony its nickname, the Tragic. In fact, he resisted the idea of giving it any program or extra musical meaning at all, as he had with his other symphonies. But the Sixth Symphony is a work imbued with a tragic vision, which continues to resonate, no matter how far into the future it may look or what events it may have foretold. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.